It's Friday!
Yay!
Oh, you can say that again.
Yay!
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, no, no. Thank you very much. It is Friday, July 10th. Relentless Positive Radio is on the air, and we're glad you are a part of it, streaming us. You can also use the free WJR app. If you can't be here noon to 2 live with us, you can come back and podcast us at WJR.com as well. And as we speak, Facebook and YouTube pages are streaming our video live. And I think I just saw the back of Rich Luzinski's head. Did he just pass through the booth there?
Yes, I think he was leaving to go to his traffic booth.
All right. We don't get to see him. It was a Rich Meister sighting.
It's like the elusive Sasquatch.
It is kind of like the elusive Sasquatch. Not that he looks that way or anything else. Happy birthday to you if it's your birthday and you thought no one was going to wish you a happy birthday. I just did. Happy anniversary as well. A premature birthday wish to Ron Smerigan, our promotions director. I misread a piece out by our fearless leader, Steve Finitari, and I thought today was Ron's birthday. It's Monday. So this coming Monday, I may say happy birthday again. A couple of things here. A New York artist has sold cubes of garbage he collected outside Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's Madison Square Garden wedding.
I don't blame the artist. I blame the people who paid him.
This is the old expression, one man's garbage is still another man's garbage.
Right.
But this is, he was selling these cubes of garbage for as much as $100 a cube of garbage collected outside Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce's Madison Square Garden wedding. And the collection is sold out.
Oh, my gosh. I think somebody was selling like a bag of air from inside the wedding as well. It's ridiculous.
You know, we never came up with, you may not even remember, the pet rock.
Yeah, I've heard of the pet rock.
People made millions selling air inside Madison Square Garden. Another brilliant business move.
Right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's iconic sci-fi blockbuster Terminator 2 Judgment Day is going to return to theaters. You know, if we needed any more proof that there's no more new creativity,
right,
and they're just recycling, they're bringing it back out for its 35th anniversary with a global re-release in 4K, Real ID 3D. These are, I don't even know what that means.
No, isn't Real ID what you have to show to get into Canada?
That's what I thought, or to use at the airport.
Yeah.
And other premium formats continuing through early September. Palm Beach International Airport. I saw this in the news a few days ago. Palm Beach International Airport officially became Donald J. Trump International Airport. I guess yesterday was the official day. So the code when you book would no longer be PBI for Palm Beach International. It's now going to be DJT.
Is that the
I'll give you a moment for you to figure out what that stands for.
Is that a consolation prize for his name not going on the Kennedy Center?
Maybe. I don't know. Good old Dolly Parton, who seems to be on a run of madness. She was fighting some kind of an illness. We were all worried about her.
Right.
And the next thing we knew, she's come out with 47 new businesses. There's a Dolly Parton coffee. We already knew about Dollywood or whatever they call
it. Yeah, Dollywood.
And now there is going to be a Broadway musical called Dolly, a true original musical, opening on Broadway this winter. The opening night set for her 81st birthday, January 19th. It's as if she kind of said, boy, I just had a scare health-wise, and I've had all these things in my mind for so long,
right.
I better get to moving on and getting them done.
Yeah, and Paul, we were worried about her. She's a national treasure. I don't think there's one person out there that dislikes Dolly Parton.
Never have heard of anyone disliking Dolly Parton.
Except Jolene.
Well, Jolene, you know, that's one of those lovers things. I had a nice night last night, was invited to attend a very special family moment. This was a true family moment. You've heard us, and we've had him on the show a number of times, Dr. Sumit Singla.
All right.
Saving lives by reminding people they should have a colonoscopy, and you should. And it's not a big deal. It's not a problem. It's, in fact, fast, easy, and life-saving. So if you haven't signed up for one, you should. But last night, we celebrated the opening officially of the Singla Family Endoscopy Center at Henry Ford Health at the main campus down the road from our Fisher Building. It was wonderful to see all of the family members and friends that showed up to support the Singla family. And though I've talked with Dr. Sumit Singla about his dad, also a doctor, and his mom, also a doctor, I had not met them until last night, and I wasn't surprised at how great they were. Because you see that when you meet the children of great people, and those children are great, and you go, wow, they did a nice job. So Dr. Stephen Kalkanis, another superstar, was the MC, obviously the son of Drs. Ved and Poonam Singla of the Singla Family Endoscopy Center. Dr. Singla said a few words, and MJ Vogt, our good friend MJ, Mary Jane Vogt, said a few words. And it was great. It was wonderful. Please get to Henry Ford Hospital and get one of these things, these tests done. I don't know, what do they say? Over the age of 40 now, younger and younger people are getting colon cancer. And it's one of the most curable cancers when found early.
Right.
But you got to do this to find it early.
Yeah, I think they've lowered it to 45, 40 if you have a family history.
Yeah. Well, it's worth doing.
But I'm like you, Paul. Just give me the works every year. Just make sure I don't have anything.
Well, I think that's a wise move, but no one's going to accept that.
I know.
I mean, it's so clogged up in healthcare as it is. But these people are trying to do nice things, and they've done a very nice thing by supporting this now, the Singla Family Endoscopy Center at Henry Ford Health Center. Easy in and out. Well, that sounded funny. I mean, easy in and out for you. Going in for the procedure.
You know? I didn't even catch that until you caught yourself.
I only caught it after I said it. and it's true both ways. I may as well be frank with you. It's true both ways. But what I was talking about was it's right there at 2799 West Grand Boulevard, and there's parking right there, and the entrance is right there. And I'm going to stick with easy in and out. Okay. 8 men indicted in plot to attack White House UFC event. Oh, I got to say it again. This judge in the Tyler Robinson preliminary whatever, what a loser he is. He must be, I called it from the beginning and I seem to be right. If he proves me wrong, that's fine. But now he's going to wait until September to announce if they'll go to trial or not. When all of us watching, all of us without law degrees, I was pre-law at U of M, all of us without law degrees, this guy is as guilty as sin. What is this guy waiting for? Just to not even announce they're going to go to trial until September?
Right. What's there to deliberate over for the next month and a half?
Nothing except waiting for the right book deal to come in for the judge, apparently. He's becoming the Lance Ito of this case. And nobody wants to be the Lance Ito of any case since the OJ trial. Okay, I'm glad I got that off my chest. Okay, Relentless Positive Radio is online. We've got a lot going on. Big news from, I hope, our Senator Mike Rogers. That's coming up in the next hour. But big news coming our way that's important. And I'm glad we're here with the team, Mike Parsons, executive producer, Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches, and Rich Meister Luzinski, with you, an important part of the whole show on WJR. President Trump is touting something that I have missed altogether, a new chain of gas stations that are selling gas for $3, about $3.49 or 47 cents a gallon, which is, I'm told, below both market prices and wholesale costs. It's apparently a network of 25 Freedom Fuel Stations. I don't know anything about it, but I do know that Jeff Manasso, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire, knows everything we need to, well, everything there is to know that's knowable, I guess. Jeff, good afternoon. Welcome back.
I wouldn't go that far, my friend, but I try.
You know more about it. You know about it. I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, well, this is as you mentioned, a network of gas stations, about 25 gas stations, dubbed the Freedom Fuel Gas Stations. The first one opening in they're already open, but the first one in Philadelphia as part of a broader initiative to offer discounted gasoline is dropping gas prices by about 50 cents per gallon below Pennsylvania's statewide average, which is 50 cents higher than that number you mentioned, 347 per gallon. So a deep discount. Drivers probably lined up to get gas there. And the White House says that it's leading the charge to lower gas prices this summer, putting more money in your pocket. So taking advantage of this situation, kind of hailing it as something that it could expand across the country. But to break it down, these 25 stations across Greater Philly. So there's stations in Pennsylvania,
and it's Southern New Jersey as well.
New Jersey.
Having lived and worked in Philly, they kind of run together anyway.
Yeah, so essentially Greater Philly. The White House indicated that this network is operated by a retailer. So there's a private retailer that's got these gas stations, that's branded its stations as Freedom Fuel to align with President Trump's push for lower energy costs. So to break it down even more, P-dubs, this is just a person, some people that like the president, like his policies, changing their gas stations, trying to capitalize on it, lowering their prices. They're not affiliated with the Trump administration. They're not receiving federal subsidies. Instead, they're lowering their prices by accepting smaller profit margins.
Wow. I mean, that 50 cents, though, this is somebody who's very, I'll say, Trump-oriented, patriotic. They're going to take a loss, it appears, if it's at 50 cents. That was the next question I was going to ask you, Jeff Manasso. Was the government or the Trump administration or somebody underwriting? But it sounds like they claim they're not.
No, they're not. They say that they're not. There's no federal subsidies, nothing like that. This is just somebody that's kind of changed their business model and perhaps capitalizing on it. I know the Trump administration is capitalizing on this, but anybody who knows anybody in the gas station business will tell you they only make a few cents profit on gasoline. Where the real money is made is in the store, convenience items and things like that. And so perhaps they'll be making some money there. But the president has argued that people should be paying less right now at the pump as crude oil futures retreated to levels seen before the Iran war. Currently at under $72 per barrel. Before the start of the war, it was just over $72 a barrel. The president has also accused some companies of price gouging and warned that the federal government could investigate if prices remained elevated. So currently the average price, according to AAA, per gallon, regular unleaded, $3.88 nationwide, obviously higher and lower in some parts of the country. That's up 4 cents from yesterday, up 6 cents from a week ago, but it's down about 30 cents from a month ago. And so prices seem to be ticking down. We'll see what happens with the latest action in Iran. But, you may wonder, okay, well, if gas prices are down, like crude oil's down, well, why aren't we seeing this immediate relief? Well, there are a couple of factors. Gas stations sell fuel they're selling fuel they bought earlier at higher prices,
price.
Obviously.
Right.
Refining fuel costs money, and those costs can stay high even when crude gets cheaper. Distribution and taxes, they obviously don't change. Seasonal demand, during the summer driving season, gas demand is typically higher, and so they will require more. You were talking about the more expensive summer fuel blends, so those are the issues. And retail prices, this is something I know, the retail prices often follow what's called the rockets and feathers pattern. So economists have long observed gas stations. They tend to raise prices right away when wholesale costs increase. Very, very slowly when the costs fall.
Oh, well, well done. Oh, you're on top of it today, my friend. Well, you're always on top of it, Jeff. You know what I'm thinking out loud, which is unusual. Not that I'm thinking out loud, but just that I'm thinking. I'm thinking out loud, Jeff. Maybe they've gotten around some of this by selling these guys the Venezuelan oil that we got for free. No, that doesn't make sense because they don't sell oil right to the gas station. It's got to go to the refinery. From the refinery, goes to the gas station. Never mind. That's why I don't think out loud very often. I was just trying to think of how they were doing this, how long they can do it. I remember, and you might too, because you've been in the business a long time too. Remember when radio stations used to take over a gas station and they would drop the price by 20 yeah. cents or 25 or 50, whatever. And when the reason I thought of this when you said the long lines, believe me, there were long lines down the street when we used to do that many, many years ago. So I thought of that at that moment. It can be done. And you're right, too, by pointing out, as gas stations do, they make their money when people come in and buy stuff in the store. That's where they make most of their profit now, which is why there are very few standalone gas stations that aren't also the stores. Anyway, Jeff, I appreciate it. Do you have a nice weekend planned?
Gonna do some baseball, wrapping up my son's baseball season, and gonna just try and catch some sunshine, a little vitamin D, and relax.
Well, you're a good dad. What's your son's name?
His name is Will.
Will?
And he's wrapping up. Yeah, Will, William. He's wrapping up his 14U season with a tournament this weekend, and going to be fun.
Oh, well, you're a good dad. Have fun. I hope he does well and enjoys himself.
Appreciate you, buddy.
All right, Jeff, thanks much. Jeff Manasso, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire, and good dad, I might point out, at 12:29. It is a pleasure and an honor to welcome back to Paul W. Smith and Focus, retired Brigadier General Doug Odie Slocum, former Air Wing Commander for 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. And you know what, General, I've thanked you a million times, but I'm going to thank you a million and one times for the incredible job you did do when you were out there running the 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge. God bless you.
Well, great. It's always great to talk with you, Paul W., and I thank you for that. But it's easy to do great work when you have wonderful men and women working out there, and certainly Selfridge is a gem of Southeast Michigan.
And you must be thrilled that your baby is thriving, and with all the new things that are happening and on the way, it's very exciting, but couldn't happen without your great leadership. Quick, I get the biggest kick out of the news media. Somebody actually said that they wanted to have people who were on the new Trump plane, Air Force One, the gift plane. They wanted everyone for the first time ever to close the shades on the airplane, and they actually thought it was so that people couldn't see in there and see who was on the plane. I don't believe that's why they closed the shades. I do believe they asked them to close the shades, and I do believe it's because that plane flew back blacked out.
Well, and that could be a very good reason. You know, a lot of airlines ask you to close the shades when you're just flying locally for temperature control and everything. But obviously, from what we've read in the news, that new Air Force One jet flew up to England, and then the president met with it back to, you know, transatlantic hop back over after the fact. So, yeah, it's an interesting discussion about the use of the new aircraft.
Do you have your own theory that you could share with us on why? I mean, I'm assuming two things. I'm assuming, first of all, the new plane would be very obvious and a very good target. We were actively back at war with these bastards in Iran, and it would be such an easy target. Secondly, I also believe, they're not going to tell us, but I believe that the newest plane doesn't have all of the capabilities of the old planes because they fixed this thing, retrofitted it in like a year, and some of that stuff would have taken longer, in my opinion. But what are your thoughts? You're the guy.
I don't know about that. And, you know, just from what I've read in the news, certainly, you know, what you just touched on, the fact that this is a commercial aircraft that was converted, the VC-25, which is the Air Force One aircraft that's been in service for decades, was built from the ground up, and it has redundant systems, communication, and even defensive type of capabilities built into the airplane from the beginning. So it would make sense that it's a lot more reliable, robust, and survivable. And if there was a credible threat, it would make a lot of sense to utilize the platform best designed for it.
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. And I don't know. I still am confused about why the plane follows President Trump out of office and goes to his library after we're putting in hundreds of millions of dollars to refit it. They said they rebuilt it from the ground up. Why wouldn't we keep that in the fleet, I wonder? Any thoughts?
Well, I think there's still an open contract to deliver a couple new Air Force
Ones. They're waiting for two new Air Force Ones.
Well, which would make this one then surplus to the requirement of the Presidential Airlift Group. And, you know, I don't know the money trail with it. I thought this was all purchased with private funds and everything and not necessarily through taxpayer money. But I'd have to talk to a lawyer about, you know, can they put the plane there legally and everything else based on that? I think it would be bad optics, but because it at this point, you know, is a government in-service aircraft.
Well, there's no question that the new Air Force One is a state-of-the-art aircraft because it's 45 years newer than the old one. But there, as you point out, General, many things that were done to that, the original Air Force One that he didn't want to fly on, the DC, I didn't know that was, you said a DC-25?
VC, Victor Charlie-25.
Oh, VC-25, I've never heard that designation. But that there are things, because it was built from the ground up and with the military, we can only imagine there are things that it can do. That the new plane, which may be state-of-the-art, but we don't build our state-of-the-art aircraft the way we build the planes that are going to ferry around the president who could be under attack. Have we ever had a president as under attack so openly by another country that you can recall, Brigadier General Doug Oldie Slocum?
Certainly not from, you know, anything I can recall off the top of my head. I mean, these are credible threats from a sitting government. And he's, you know, in this particular case, he's in a country that has a shared border in that case. So, you know, near proximity, and certainly they've proven capabilities to reach out quite a ways with the weapons that they've had that have proven effective. So, you know, we can understand it's a credible threat. And from what I read, the Wall Street Journal was first to break that it was the Israeli intelligence that shared that threat information with the United States.
Yeah. Anything else that you'd like to add that's been on your mind or on your chest, you'd like to get it off, this would be the place.
I'm not sure based on how you phrased that, but you know, I always like to put the spotlight on the wonderful men and women. And when we talk about the planes, I'm thinking, you know, the plane is a platform, but it's always the people that make all the difference in the world. And it's the highly trained individuals motivated that are away from their family and friends doing service to this country that deserves so much of, you know, our gratitude for making things happen the way that they do. So once again, just a salute to the wonderful people who serve our country in uniform.
And that's why I can continue without any hesitation to say the best, General Doug Oldie Slocum, former Air Wing Commander for the 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. Thank you again and again and again for your service, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you, sir.
Always great to talk with you, Paul W., and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
All right, the same to you, sir, as we continue in Focus on WJR at 1243. You ever have a situation, you're not a talk show host, are you? Maybe you might be a podcaster, but maybe Mike understands what I'm talking about, Mike Parsons. I love this, I just don't know if it's the right thing to do. Would you like to know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. I just saw on the screen that some representative, August Pfluger, a Republican representative, I don't know him at all, but responding to the multiple attacks on Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. I mean, there's a lot going on in our world. I am shocked that somebody is weighing in from this position as a representative. But be that as it may, he says, regarding the multiple attacks on Caitlin Clark, I'm putting the league on notice that if it keeps letting the violent targeting slide, they could find themselves facing a DOJ and EEOC crackdown for violating federal civil rights law.
That's a stretch. Yeah, so I think I know what you mean, because something should be done about the treatment of Caitlin Clark, but it probably shouldn't be Congress to be the one to do something about
it. I love the idea, but I just don't think this is the right place.
Right. They're not the right entity to do something about
it. Yeah. You'd like to think that the WNBA would wake up and smell the coffee. They so far haven't. But anyway, I just saw that on the screen, and I wanted to pass it along to my my family of listeners here on WJR. Dr. Tim Nash has joined us a number of times. He is, of course, the Senior Vice President Emeritus, Director of the Northwood University Center for the Advancement of Freedom, Free Enterprise, and Entrepreneurship. And his new book, Books and the Founding Fathers and Their Influence on America Today, Dr. Timothy G. Nash, noted Northwood University economist. Congratulations, Doc.
Thanks, Paul W. It's been a labor of love with my co-author, George H. Nash. No relationship, but George is a well-known PhD in history who is an expert on a number of different thinkers, from Herbert Hoover to even going back to the Founding Fathers. And this was an idea the two of us had to take some work George had done and work I had done, combine it and talk about the fact that we formed the greatest country in the world 250 years ago. In September, it'll be the 289th celebration of the U.S. Constitution. Those two documents are the reason why we have the great entrepreneurs. We have the great economic activity. We're the world's most respected economy, and we're the light of liberty, and it's all because of the Founding Fathers and our ability to make economic progress and develop a system that would be the envy of the world. And so that's was the purpose of the book, to point out that capitalism is not a bad thing, and what the Founding Fathers produced created the greatest standard of living for the largest number of people in the world today.
Why, I'm throwing you a curveball right away here, why has that message been lost on so many of the youth of today? How in the world could people be turning their back on capitalism and embracing socialism into communism? I think we dropped the ball on university campuses when we saw these things happening and didn't do anything about it. But I want to know your learned view on how we got where we are today and where we might be headed.
You know, that is such a great question, Paul. I know that when I was growing up, we were taught to love America, to believe in America, and not to be anything other than benchmarking to people that were successful. It didn't matter whether they were black, white, male, female, immigrant, five generations in the United States. If somebody was successful, that was the American dream, and you didn't want to do away with their success. You wanted to encourage their success, but emulate it so that you could have that lifestyle for your family. And, you know, I think we just don't teach what I was taught, what you were taught in grade school, junior high, high school, and university today. And I think that this book is an example of just putting out in hard, cold facts how America came to fruition, how we righted wrongs such as slavery and women's rights. And today, you know, one of the great hallmarks is just look at how many people want to leave the United States, give up their citizenship and go elsewhere. You hear of one or two people, you know, maybe every decade that do that, but we have millions of people sight unseen that want to come to the United States and be an American because they want the American dream as well. And yet at home, a lot of our citizens don't appreciate it.
I thought,
especially the youth.
I thought for sure, hearing from all these people that came to the World Cup, I thought one of the greatest benefits is hearing from these people who are shocked at how much they love America and Americans, and that they even say in their own words that the international media painted a very incorrect picture of America. I was hoping that would influence these people. It's not. It doesn't seem to be. And this is a book that they would do well to read, but we won't be able to get them to read it. People like you and me, people like my listeners will read it. We don't need it, but it's fascinating to read Books and the Founding Fathers and Their Influence on America Today by Dr. George H. Nash, presidential historian, and our friend and no relation, Dr. Timothy G. Nash, noted Northwood University economist. It is a timely reflection in our 250th, a timely reflection on liberty, learning, and leadership. And it tells a great American story. And I understand it even got a mention in a Supreme Court brief, Doctor?
Yes, sir. One of the endorsers of the book is former Vice President Mike Pence. And his attorney, Mark Wheat, is a person that has read the book. And George and Mark have been friends for a long time. And they read one of the preliminary copies of the book. And Mark Wheat came back and said he was going to put it in an amicus brief, meaning he's supporting a case in New York City where they want to take or constrain property rights of land owners in New York City. And so, you know, the Founding Fathers were clearly in favor of private property, protecting individual rights. And so they went thoroughly through the book and cited it in this Supreme Court amicus brief to support the enforcement of private property rights rather than the delusion of private property rights in New York that's being talked about on a regular basis today.
You connect the past to the present, reminding us that the relationship between liberty and learning remains as vital today as it was at America's founding. And there has been a problem, a disconnect in the learning, especially at our universities. Books and the Founding Fathers and Their Influence on America Today, co-written by our guest and friend, Dr. Tim Nash, Senior Vice President Emeritus, Director of the Northwood University Center for the Advancement of Freedom, Free Enterprise, Entrepreneurship. God bless you and congratulations to you, Doc.
Thanks, Paul W., and keep up the great work, sir. You are a beacon for this country.
Well, that's awfully kind of you to say. We continue in focus. Paul W. Smith, WJR. Hour number two. It's been a quick first hour, that's for sure, on this Friday. Oh, it's Friday! I've never done it a second hour, but I've got...
Yay!
Well, even if I caught Danielle, Queen of the Switches, off, Mike Parsons was standing at the ready. And I appreciate that. Talk a little bit so I can take a sip of coffee.
Oh, sorry about that. I was talking about...
I seem so powerful here.
Yes. Well, right. I said surely he won't call on me to pick up his slack, you know, so quickly. I was still patting yes. myself on the back from yelling yay.
I had something caught in my throat. All right. I am very happy to get right to this is where we usually talk. Do we have another time where we're going to talk before the end of the show? We're going to talk.
You know, we can cut Rieger short and talk.
Well, we don't want to cut the movies short. Yeah. We'll play it by ear here. And it is Friday, so Dave Rieger Reviews It, is coming up. But I got a great guy standing by. I admit he is a great friend. He did the introduction of me in Chicago into the National Radio Hall of Fame, and I will be forever thankful for that. But I've always supported him after I got to know him and his good work. Mike Rogers, the Republican Senate candidate, former FBI agent, should have headed up the FBI. Oh, I don't want to keep going through that. A former chair of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, and a guy who could bring some sanity back to Washington, which we really need. Congressman Mike Rogers, always a pleasure having you on. I hope you're well.
Paul, it is always good to be on. Again, it was always an honor to be able to
introduce you, the radio icon of the great state of Michigan. And talk about common sense. Nobody better than you, my friend.
Well, very kind of you to say. I'm very concerned about what's going on in our country right now. It started in New York when they have hired a communist, Jew-hating communist, in to run New York. It's frightening. There's no other way to put it. It is frightening. And there's a great column from the Detroit News in the Think section yesterday by Caitlin Buss, who's going to join us in a moment, with the headline, "With Socialism on the Rise, Don't Count Out El Sayed." That just scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's where all the energy of the Democrat Socialist of America is. The Democrat Party of Michigan has veered very far left. And, you know, all the polling we've seen has him up sometimes by double digits in the primary. And so, you know, it is something to be concerned about. That's where people are going in the state. And people say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this happened in Michigan. Remember, Bernie Sanders won Michigan when he was running, you know, his effort to get the nomination to be president of the United States. So this is not out of the ordinary. He's got Bernie Sanders and AOC coming into the state. He brought Hassan Piker in, who also... to say questionable is being too kind about the kinds of things he was saying, including America deserved 9/11. So, I mean, a lot to be concerned about. I just don't think that's where we are. And I say this, Paul, because I think I have some big news to share for you. This is why we need to send somebody back there, you know, crazy versus common sense. Let's pick common sense and somebody who knows how to work to get things done. As you know, the bridge has been a big
Gordie Howe Bridge, right.
Gordie Howe Bridge. Well, I had a conversation with the secretary yesterday, Secretary of Commerce Lutnick, and the deal will be announced in the next few days. And here's what the good news is on this. So this is getting wrapped up. That bridge is going to get open. But the financial deal that they secured for us, we went from getting no revenue. I believe it'll be as much as half the revenue. Joint determination what the tolls are. Remember, the Canadians were going to have 100% control of what the tolls were on the board. That's going to change. And this was the most important thing that I've been working with the White House and got this from the secretary yesterday, that they will guarantee and ensure that we're not pouring Chinese cars over that after that bridge. A little bit of time, some tough negotiation, some long conversations. This is how you get things done. We're going to get the bridge open. And we're going to get a much better deal for Michiganders and the United States.
Now, I'm assuming we've got Mike Rogers with us. He'd like to be our senator. He was a great congressman. Mike telling us he's been talking to Secretary Lutnick about paying attention to that bridge, the Gordie Howe Bridge, and frankly, what is being taken as a threat of Chinese cars on Michigan manufacturing and auto workers. There's going to be several ways that needs to be dealt with. But one way they're concerned about is those cars flooding into America via that bridge from Canada, because they're going to be legal in Canada and people are fighting them here in the United States. So
yeah,
you say there's a better deal on the table, even though this deal that is in place was agreed upon by the Canadians and the Americans. The Canadians are open to changing that?
Well, candidly, it was a terrible deal. We would have seen absolutely no revenue. So you're going to diminish the one bridge that pays taxes, the Ambassador Bridge, and you're going to have much more traffic on this new bridge, of which the United States would get nothing.
Story back in the beginning, and no one was listening. But
well,
so here
from
it
your
is.
Lips to God's ears, as my mother would say, we've gotten this thing done. So listen, I think this is exciting news. The secretary is excited. We had a great conversation, as I said yesterday. The details will come out, as he said, in the next couple of days. But he gave me that assurance about the Chinese car provision on. And why this is important, if people are wondering. So what the Canadians did is they upped their 100% built Chinese cars coming into Canada. In the initial phase, up to about 50,000, total 70,000 cars. And they took the tariffs on those cars going into Canada from 100% to 6%. And you say, well, okay, that's Canada. Who cares? 30% of all of the content and cars built in Canada comes from content providers here in the United States, mostly from Michigan. This will have a huge negative impact on their businesses and their companies. And so stopping, if you can imagine, you bring that same problem into the United States across that bridge, it causes a huge problem for American auto manufacturing. So to me, this was huge. It was big. And it goes to show you why you want to send somebody back to the United States Senate that's going to be able to sit down and look these folks in the eye and get a deal that helps Michigan, saves our auto industry, and moves America forward. I think this is just so critically important. Sending somebody back that's going to poke the president in the eye and his cabinet in the eye full time for the next 2 years does Michigan no favors. We won't get anything out of it. This way, we're going to at least get things like this worked out and done to the benefit of Michigan and our auto workers right here in the state of Michigan.
Well, God bless you, Mike Rogers. And it appears to me that you're breaking this story on this very program. So we thank you for that as well.
Well, you're the first to get the news, Paul. I couldn't think of a finer person to have that conversation with right out of the box.
We appreciate it. You and Christy have been traveling around and talking to people, and I hope that you're being well-received as well you should be, and I wish you the best of luck in this race. We're the winners.
Thank you, Paul.
I think we're the winners if you win.
Well, Christy gets better reception than I do, I've just decided.
Well, and
Once they meet Christy, they say, I want to talk to Christy, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Believe me, I understand that on my end as well with Kim, no question about
Kim.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
So true.
Good luck
Thank
to you,
my
friend.
I really appreciate it. Good luck. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mike Rogers, Republican Senate candidate, former FBI agent, former chair of the U.S. Intelligence Committee. You know he can bring some sanity back to Washington. You know he will be on our side representing us the way we would want to be represented in Washington. 113, we continue in focus on WJR. Well, they just removed the interim next to Mike Boynton Jr.'s name. So now that means that Mike Boynton Jr. has been named Michigan basketball head coach on a two-year deal. That just coming through. We continue in focus with Paul W. Michael Bulata of Bulata Law is here. He's a federal criminal defense attorney, former federal prosecutor, and has far more experience in this area than any of us. But I still want to say, Michael, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon. I thought we were going to talk some hoops there from your intro.
Well, that just came through, and I thought I better mention it. But I don't want people to ever think they're missing anything when they're listening to this program. So talk me off the ledge, if you can, Michael Bulata. Look, this judge in the Charlie Kirk case is going to win the Judge Lance Ito Award of today from me. From the moment I saw him and observed him, I had no confidence, and it's gotten worse every day.
What seems to trouble you about it?
Well, for one thing, deciding to edit certain things, yet we watched, for example, the interview with his lover, and it's like open and shut case. It's over. And yet, he now has announced he's waiting till September to decide if this should go to trial or not. I can only think he's waiting for the better book deal to come in. I don't know what he's doing. What do you think he's doing?
Yeah, that is a bit puzzling. So just to tell your listeners what is happening here in Utah, it's not a trial that's happening. It's not a full actual trial. It's simply a preliminary hearing where the only issue is probable cause, meaning is it reasonably possible that, reasonable and likely, I guess, that Mr. Robinson committed the crime? That's all the standard is. It's just there's a reasonable likelihood of it. That's all they have to show. So you're right to be skeptical about him pushing the date to make his decision, especially given the evidence that was produced over those 5 days. And the Lance Twiggs testimony, which was done, by the way, via a video, as opposed to bringing Lance Twiggs into the courtroom to be questioned by Robinson's attorney. So, but they're allowed to do that. And people in Michigan might be thinking, well, why didn't they have to bring the roommate in to testify? But in Michigan, because in Michigan, you can't bring in hearsay. You have to bring the witnesses in at preliminary examination. But in this, in Utah, they can use hearsay. That's why they were allowed to play that tape of Mr. Twibbs.
Highly edited tape, which made no sense because everything we saw still points to the guiltiness.
Yeah, this is essentially a slow plea, the way I look at it, because, first of all, the death penalty is on the table right now in Utah, and Utah is an active death penalty state. They put people to death by lethal injection primarily, but they reserve the right to use a firing squad as well. That's a backup provision.
What a choice.
Yeah. That's a Sophie's choice. So I don't know why the judge is needing that much time. Probable cause, like I said, is a much lower standard than a trial standard, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. So there really I can't think of any justification for him to take that long.
I can't either. But beyond that, it should be pointed out in Utah, in this preliminary hearing, as you have so brilliantly pointed out, Michael Bulata of Bulata Law, they are able to do these things on videotape. However, when this comes to trial, and if it doesn't come to trial, then something is terribly wrong with the system. But when this comes to trial, as I understand it, Lance Twiggs will be able to be called on the stand, right?
Absolutely. And then the prosecutor would have to call, not have to, but would most likely call Lance Twiggs because he provides essentially a confession, a tearful confession, and remorse and regret for the shooting. Apart from other evidence, there's very strong evidence because the towel that wrapped around the rifle that was recovered that was used to kill Mr. Kirk, that has DNA that was linked to Mr. Robinson's DNA. So they have that. They have surveillance. They have these statements to the roommate. They have plenty of evidence, I believe, for probable cause.
I got to tell you, and that's why I'm not in charge, and that's why we aren't in charge, and we have a system, and you follow that system, and you understand it, and you respect it. But at one point or another, you would think that a judge in this circumstance and situation with the preponderance of evidence so obviously against Tyler Robinson, yeah, that he would stand up and...
You don't need a preponderance.
And,
you don't
what's
need
that?
A preponderance. You
What's
don't
that?
Need a preponderance.
Oh, you don't need
you
a preponderance. All right, well...
No, that's a higher standard. That's 51%, more likely than not. What you are only asking for is just... You know, could this have happened? Is it reasonable? Is it reasonably possible? Yeah, that's really what this is.
Everything that we've heard, I don't know how a judge sits there without standing up and saying, folks, forget about it. Forget about calling this a preliminary hearing. This is the case. He's guilty. He's going to the death penalty or whatever. I know we're not supposed to be able to do that, but we're all watching this going, really? We're gonna spend money, millions of dollars, to just prove what we just saw, that he clearly is guilty?
Sure. I mean, I understand the reaction, but it is important to understand that the system is set up this way so that people who testify, their testimony can be tested. We have a constitution in our country. The Sixth Amendment of the Constitution guarantees defendants the right to confront those witnesses. So there's constitutional procedures that, yes, they take time and they can frustrate you, but they're essential, really, for our whole system to operate in a fair manner. We have one of the best systems. As much as I sometimes complain probably in some of our calls, we have the most comprehensively fair criminal justice system in the world, in my opinion. So as many warts and bumps as it has, it overall it is a beautiful thing.
Do you think, did you like my OJ reference, the judge?
I love your OJ reference. I happened to be a DA in Los Angeles at the time. I wasn't on that case, but I know Judge Ito. I did a murder trial in front of Judge Ito after the OJ case, where I had a lot less evidence and no DNA evidence for sure.
Oh boy.
But we got a conviction because it wasn't OJ Simpson. It was a gang member killing another gang member. So
a little easier to convict. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. So.
Well, God bless you. Thank you for your expertise and
You're very
for
welcome.
Holding our hand. Anything else you want to add that I didn't think to ask about?
No, I just would point out my opinion on what's likely to happen, I believe, based on the evidence I've seen so far, it's very likely that there will be a plea in this case. And then the bargaining chip that Utah has is the death penalty. But they may feel that their case is strong enough that they don't want to deal.
Oops.
Keep the death penalty on the table, which, in which case there would be a trial. So I think that's the only way that there's
just
a trial.
Just so I can catch up for my listeners as well, you were speaking quickly and we cut out for a second. In that you're saying,
it sounds
that,
like all the court reporters there trying to write
well,
down what I'm saying.
Well, when you say they might plea, they may never get to trial if they
exactly.
can plea out the take away the death
yes.
penalty and
that's,
say just
that's
goes,
the issue right now. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
That's the issue.
Thanks for the heads up.
Too.
As
of
always,
course.
Michael Bulata, Law, federal criminal defense attorney, former federal prosecutor, all around good guy. Thank you, Michael.
Have a good weekend, Paul. Thanks.
You do the same. 127 at 760 WJR. Caitlin Buss, deputy editorial page editor of the great award-winning The Detroit News, with some reflection on last night's gubernatorial debate, which somehow I got the equipment to work properly and I got to see it, and a very troubling column. And because I believe in her, trust her, respect her so much, when I see a column like this one that ran yesterday in the Detroit News in the Think section with the headline, "With Socialism on the Rise, Don't Count Out El Sayed," no one, including Republicans, should be terribly surprised that progressive Democrat candidate Abdul El Sayed could very well win Michigan's Senate primary race, or that Democrat socialist candidates are gaining traction throughout the country, fueled by enthusiasm from young voters. I'm not going to lie to you, Caitlin. This scares the hell out of me.
Well, you and my mom has been kind of in my ear about it quite a bit, too. She didn't love it. but I think, you know, as I keep saying to her, I'm just trying to explain. I am not defending socialism. So let's put that out there. I'm just trying to explain why we're here. And, you know, I'm 40. So I'm 10 years older than this age group of people that are drawn to these ideas, I think, increasingly. And, you know, what I've witnessed has been similar to them. I mean, government involvement at every step of the way, certainly at the federal level, right, for the past 20 years. And so now they're saying, hey, we want to see, you know, some of that in our pocket, not just the companies that the government likes.
Why not fix it, though, through the system that has been proven to be the best system in the world? Why would they turn, I think I know the answer, but why would they turn to a system that has not worked ever, anywhere?
Yeah, though that's a great question. I think there's a lack of knowledge about history. One, I just think widespread, they don't know that these ideas have been tried and failed. But I think also Trump, and I don't want to blame Trump for this happening, but I think there was such maybe hope behind Trump's presidency for some of these groups that, you know, he would bust through the system or finally expose the system for what it is. And so when you couple that with, you know, the already underlying frustration with things not going the right way, they're like, you know, we want this to work for us. No one has delivered on really what they said they were going to do.
Well, and it's hard to argue with them because we watched this happening in universities and we talked about it, but nobody really did anything about it. I don't know if we felt we couldn't say something. You know, when they started saying everyone on campus should have freedom of speech except conservatives, I mean, and they would literally riot if a conservative was booked to speak to anybody on a campus. And we stood back and said, well, boy, that's terrible. Well, but we didn't do anything about it.
Yeah. No, and, you know, Trump, I want to say he fulfilled some of those cultural, you know, changes that I think most Americans were looking for, some more fairness in free speech. But there's been so many other questions, I think, that have arisen, you know, during his now second term, too, that, you know, it's just the timing is what it is. And it's kind of becoming this perfect storm leading up to this primary. And Abdul's found himself somehow, you know, right in the middle of it.
Filling the gap, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, giving people another choice, even if it's not a good choice, it's another choice. And I think that the youth just see it as another choice because the other way isn't working. I don't think they're thinking beyond that. They should watch New York and see what's going on there. What about all those free grocery stores, free bus rides, free this, free that, that has not come to fruition?
Yeah, their air at 78, right? I think that's what he told everyone they needed to keep their air at. So
people can die like they do in Europe because of worried about global warming.
Yeah. So
unbelievable.
It's become, I think, you know, it might be the biggest Senate race in the country. I mean, it's just right here in our backyard. So very interesting.
Very interesting indeed. Speaking of interesting, after screwing up the first debate one way or another, I did watch last night, which is crazy to have two in a row, but I don't set these things up. But what did you think of the debate from Wood TV in Grand Rapids, United States Representative John James, Perry Johnson, and former Attorney General Mike Cox? What did you think?
You know, I thought it was better than the first one that week on everyone's part. So I thought everyone handled themselves a bit better. There were, of course, some barbs from a couple of the candidates that I maybe would have done differently. You know, I wasn't thrilled to see such division. I don't think it's ultimately helpful, but I'm realistic enough to know that, you know, one of them just wants to win this. I think any of them will have a hard time facing probably Benson. It may not be her, but that's looking like what it will be. So my hope now is that they focus on, you know, the general basically from here on out and get past this pettiness. I don't think any of it is really resonating. You know, I don't think the polling is, I don't think we know where it stands right now. So I think they need to look forward. That's what I hope.
Well, it was fascinating and interesting is another way of putting it. You've got Perry Johnson, who says and is at this point kind of an outsider. He says mm-hmm. he's beholden to no one. And because of that, I'm in an ideal position to be able to bring the quality and efficiency to Michigan. But mm-hmm. there are a lot of things attached to him that are not as attractive, I guess. And people know Mike Cox. He's been an upstanding and outstanding guy, as has Representative John James. You hate mm-hmm. to hear all of the things that are being said in all the commercials. They're really bad because they're going to make the actual election even tougher for them to beat what might, as you say, may indeed be Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. So it's just it's a tough time, that's for sure.
I think it's probably between Cox and James. And, you know, I see kind of different routes for each of them, different appeal to different groups of voters. So I think both of them have a route to winning if they make it through this. But whether or not it's going to be James or Cox, I don't know. I don't know. We're going to see.
How close are we to the new podcast, Common Sense, with Caitlin and Kelly?
Yeah, no, I did talk about it yesterday. So it's still an idea we're working on.
Well, Caitlin Buss, Kelly Cobb, two very interesting and brilliant thinkers. I think you'd bring a lot to the podcast. And I know you said, yeah, but with the little kids, do it on the kitchen table. Let the little kids run around and make noise, because that's America. That's life. That's what we all deal with, or the people you're going to be reaching deal with. Here's something I hope you'll reach for if you haven't already. We had Dr. Timothy Nash on from the noted Northwood University economist, along with Dr. George Nash, not related, but presidential historian. As America celebrates 250 years of independence, books and the founding fathers and their influence on America today is the very book we'd want all those kids who feel that communism light or socialism light, as you called it in your column, should read, but we'll never get them to read it. But it is worth it for the rest of us to take a fresh look at the leaders who shaped our nation beyond their roles as soldiers, statesmen, revolutionaries. The founders were avid readers who believed that knowledge and education were essential to preserving liberty. We probably have done ourselves harm by always portraying these guys, the founders, the framers, as old men. It's just lately we've been saying, no, he was 21. This guy was 23. This guy was 22. I mean, that might have resonated a little better with these kids today.
I agree. I've always been fascinated in the lives of those people, but not everyone is. I do want it. There is hope. And even my kids, you know, they're not huge into reading, certainly not all of them, but there is new media out there about founding principles. So parents should find it. There's a show called The Tuttle Twins. It's great.
What is it again?
It's called The Tuttle Twins. and it does free market principles, and it's a cartoon. So parents should check it out.
And frankly, call it brainwashing if you want, or right-washing.
Yeah, exactly.
It is something. If it's something, we got to get through to the kids early on, because as we see, if we leave it to the people they face in most of the universities, they get screwed up and actually think socialism works. And there isn't a place that it ever has worked.
No, you're right. So the I'm working
Tuttle
on
twins.
It too with my kids.
I'm sure you are. The Tuttle twins. Caitlin Buss, Deputy Editorial Page Editor of the Detroit News. God bless you and Kelly, and have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Paul. Thanks.
Thank you. 142 at WJR. You know, throughout the course of our lives, we all have those people who we can count on. We do. People who would drop everything and rush to help us if we have a challenge to overcome. It's really, that's the textbook definition of dependability. And now for 87 years, we Michiganders have counted on Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan to stand behind us during life's biggest moments. Babies being born, broken bones being repaired, times when we need care that improves the quality and oftentimes the length of our life. Blue Cross pays more than $100 million every day, more than $100 million every day for the care of millions of us, doing their work in partnership with doctors and hospitals, providing health insurance in every zip code in all 83 Michigan counties, under the great leadership of Tricia Keith, president and CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Blue Cross makes sure we get the care we need wherever and whenever we need it, thanks to their nationwide network of 2 million participating care providers. They're standing behind us every day for 87 years. And when you can rely on a company to be there for you again and again and again, that, my friends, is dependability. That, my friends, is Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Learn more about their work at miBlueDaily.com. That's MI like in Michigan, miBlueDaily.com. And congratulations to the team, and the family of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. J.D. Power naming them number one in customer satisfaction for the third year in a row, 4 out of 5 years. That's dependability. And that's affordability. And we'll never forget that affordability matters. 144 at 760 WJR. And just before we go to Dave, sometimes breaking news happens and it just slips by, but this is important breaking news that happened on WJR just minutes ago. We want you to hear it again from Congressman and Senate candidate Mike Rogers. I haven't heard this actual cut, but it's on the Gordie Howe Bridge and more, if you'll play it, Danielle.
Well, I had a conversation with the Secretary yesterday, Secretary of Commerce Letnik, and the deal will be announced in the next few days. And here's what the good news is. So this is getting wrapped up. That bridge is going to get open. But the financial deal that they secured for us, we went from getting no revenue. I believe it'll be as much as half the revenue. Joint determination what the tolls are. Remember, the Canadians were going to have 100% control of what the tolls were on the board. That's going to change. And this was the most important thing that I've been working with the White House and got this from the Secretary yesterday, that they will guarantee and ensure that we're not pouring Chinese cars over that after that bridge.
Wow. Senate candidate, don't get ahead of yourself, former congressman, Senate candidate, Mike Rogers. Very big news. You heard it here first, as is often the case, on WJR. The Gordie Howe Bridge opening very soon under different financial circumstances that we've all been led to believe were happening, and it sounds like it's going to be in favor of a more balanced situation for the United States. Just wanted you to hear that. Dave Rieger is here. Rieger Reviews It, sponsored by Wigley's famous Eastern Market corned beef. Dine in or carry out the best Wigley's corned beef sandwiches, the best around. And you find them at Frank's Deli and Grill, 3405 Russell Street in Detroit's Eastern Market. They're open every day from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. While you're there, be sure to say hi to Victor, the owner. He loves his customers as much as he loves the corned beef, and we love it too. Hello, David. Evil Dead Burn in theaters. What do you think?
So this is your typical horror story where they just break all the rules. It follows a grieving widow. Her name's Alice. Her abusive husband, William, he dies in a tragic car accident. So what does she decide to do? She travels with his family to their rundown, isolated, ancestral home in the woods. Because that'd be the first thing that I would do is do that, right? Because you know something bad's going to happen. So his brother finds some old papers and, my favorite part of this movie, some reel-to-reel audio tapes, Paul. And they find them in the attic, and they belong to their grandfather, who was a part of a secret society. They play the recordings, and unfortunately, this unearths these demons from a nearby remote lake. And now Alice has to fight for her life to survive the evening or the night because the whole family turns into these demons.
Yikes. Evil Dead Burn in theaters starting today. Let's listen.
We found something. The Necronomicon. The Book of the Dead.
You know they don't want me there.
You're part of the family.
Despite my warnings, they read from the book, Unleashing Demons. 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 God help us.
The whole family can be together again. Children?
I still may not be able to sleep tonight.
Please, open the door.
Ah! Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Listen, we all love The Evil Dead, the original, Sam Raimi, you know, Wayne State grad, Michigan guy. Evil Dead 2 was even good. They probably need to stop making the Evil Dead movies, okay, and the Evil Dead TV shows and the spinoffs. Yeah.
One Evil Dead too far.
Yeah, let's move on, I think. Yeah, we'll give it 1.5 Wigglies, and not very good. It's difficult to make a good horror movie these days, Paul. It's probably more difficult to come up with an original idea for some horror movies.
1.5 Wigglies. Not good. All right, let's listen to Elle, which we can find on Amazon Prime.
Give it up one more time for the birthday girl, Elle Woods.
I would just like to raise a glass to all of you. My friends, my world. I'm so lucky to have this life. I wouldn't change a thing.
We have something important we want to talk to you about.
Elle, we're moving to Seattle.
No. It doesn't sound right. I'm just a girl. I'm just a girl in the world.
Nice umbrella.
Thanks, it's an heirloom.
She's joking, you look like an idiot.
I'm Elle.
What?
I like iced coffee, the month of July, and when people dress kind of tennis-y, even if they don't play tennis.
Did someone put you up to this?
Okay. It's also being marketed as Elle from the world of Legally Blonde, which originally portrayed Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things that are difficult for me because it's a prequel.
Correct.
Supposedly it happened before Legally Blonde, which I don't remember anyway.
Exactly.
So talk to me.
So again, I think everybody who loves the Legally Blonde universe, couple movies, will like this. It's a prequel. It's 1995. Great soundtrack. And it just talks about her life. Her father, who's a famous plastic surgeon in Bel Air, botches a celebrity nose job. And the family has to move to Seattle.
That's never happened before.
Exactly. So the family has to move to Seattle, and it's her just trying to deal with, you know, a California girl going to Seattle, and there's something going on with the principal at the new school, and you kind of start to see the beginnings of, you know, what she will become later, getting her law degree. So I think that it was very well done. I enjoyed it. I like the Legally Blonde movies. This is a series. And I think people will like it. I'll give it 3 Wigglies. I think people will really like it. I did. I enjoyed it.
And it was not aimed at you.
No, it is not. It was not aimed at no. It was aimed at the people who liked Legally Blonde.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
But I did enjoy it. I think that I think it will do very well.
L on Amazon Prime, 3 Wigglies. Evil Dead Burn in theaters, 1.5 Wigglies. Yeah. You know where you should be heading to watch the movies over the weekend. You should be heading right there at home. Always a pleasure, Dave Rieger. Rieger reviews it. Will we see you Monday at the golf outing?
I will be there at the Lomas Browns, the second annual Lomas Brown golf
Remind
outing.
Remind me, please, to give you my phone and show me how I can erase things, because I'm like, it won't erase anymore, and I need to.
You got it. We'll
thank
stop
you, because you're my Apple pro. Thanks to the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, Ann Thomas, and my Kim Smith. And thank you for being the best and brightest audience in all of radio whenever you listen to WJR. Yep, Monday we will be at the beautiful Best in the West Country Club of Detroit, as my old golf tournament has become the Lomas Brown Junior Classic. We'll be broadcasting from there from noon to 2, and Lomas has done a tremendous job. Second time now, it just gets better and better. He does a great job. You go on out, make it a great weekend, and we'll look forward to being with you Monday. Regards, Paul W. Smith.